Number 14, Regional Salmon Recovery Organizations. This is a briefing. So there's a number of presenters. You can all come on up, please. Turn it over to whomever.
Okay, good morning, Chair and Commissioners and Director Storr, Deputy Director Windrup. My name is Eric Netherland, and I'm the Science Director in the Fish Program. And it's my privilege to introduce this topic and this set of speakers. And so I'll do that quickly, and they may introduce themselves again, but I thought it would be helpful. So to my right is Melody Krems, and she's the Executive Director for the Upper Columbia Salmon Recovery Funding Board, Salmon Recovery Board. Mm-hmm. And next to her is Jess Helsley, and she's the Executive Director for the Washington Coast Salmon Partnership, and also Executive Director for the Washington Coast Salmon Partnership and the
Foundation,
right. Mm-hmm. And then we have Steve Manlow, who's Executive Director for the Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Board. And we have on the very end there Scott Brewer, who's Executive Director for the Hood Canal Coordinating Council. So these individuals represent four of the seven salmon recovery organizations across Washington State. And as you know, along with the tribes and DFW, these organizations are really the engines that drive salmon recovery in Washington State. And it's these organizations that are actually responsible for developing and implementing the federal NOAA-approved salmon recovery plans in Washington State, again, along with the tribes and the co-managers. But it's also these organizations that are directly connected to the extensive salmon recovery network that we have throughout the state that includes our local citizens, our local elected officials, and many of our local elected officials sit on the boards of these organizations, and then the thousands of individuals that it takes to put salmon recovery projects on the ground. So all that network is really connected through these organizations. And our department and the tribes, we work very closely on a day-to-day basis with these organizations and at a staff level. And some examples are for DFW, we do a lot of the monitoring, we provide a lot of the technical assistance, we package up the science, and with the tribes, we really collect the information that helps the groups assess salmon recovery in Washington State. However, these organizations haven't really presented to the Fish and Wildlife Commission for a very long time. And so we saw this as an opportunity to really refresh this relationship. And so I thank the boards for taking the time to come and speak with the commission. And I think we all agree that this really isn't, we don't look at this as one presentation, but maybe the beginning of a dialogue between these recovery boards and our commission so that we can all work towards salmon recovery. So with that, I'll step away and I'll hand it over to the presenters. And I think it's going to be Jess who's going to be the lead presenter. So thank you.
So good morning, Chair and Director and Deputy Director. I would also like to really recognize, Eric, who sits as the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife representative on the Salmon Recovery Funding Board, as well as Jeff Breckel, who's another member on the Salmon Recovery Funding Board, for taking the time to sit down with the director and kind of kickstart the impetus for this meeting. So thank you very much for your efforts in bringing us here, and thank you very much for taking the time today to hear us share our message. So a kind of a quick overview, we really saw some of the turnover and some of the new folks that were on the commission. We saw this as an opportunity to help kind of take a step back to remember where we were, how salmon recovery was initiated in Washington State, and the various roles that our entities played. So we're going to discuss very briefly the overall statewide salmon recovery structure, the role that those regional organizations have played in development of the recovery and, in some cases, sustainable salmon plans. Talk about what we do as a collective group of regional directors for the state, and then kind of what are we focusing on in implementation of these regional recovery plans, talking about the important opportunity for the integration of what we commonly refer to as the All H's, and now has become the All H's and Pi, right? So we have the habitat, harvest, hydropower, hatcheries, and now predation and invasives. So if you weren't all hungry before now, you will be hungry by the end of our presentation talking about salmon and pie. We're going to kind of have a bit of an example presentation on past coordination and collaboration efforts that have been tremendously successful, while identifying some opportunity for future and enhanced collaboration. And then each of the directors that are here today will kind of talk briefly about some of the needs that we see in our region, and then we hope that there can be some dialogue. We can answer some questions for you, and ultimately our goal will be to meet back with policy-level staff and eventually the commission again on some of the goals and achievements we would like to see come out of this initial meeting. So let me make one quick note here in that this map has one slight error in that it kind of lumped the Hood Canal region into Puget Sound. So you will see the next map a little bit more accurately representing the seven regions of the state. But initially, to meet the needs of people and fish, recovery was organized by region and by watershed. Salmon don't tend to care about political boundaries. They swim where the water is. So recovery organizations were created at that point to write and coordinate the implementation of protection, restoration, and recovery plans for the state's declining salmon and steelhead populations. These recovery organizations are directed, as Eric stated, by both county, city, tribal, and citizen representatives, which are then advised by state and federal agency scientists. So the Council of Regions is comprised of the group of seven recovery organizations. So each director from those seven recovery organizations sits on what's termed as the Council of Regions. And we work to do several things. We work to build understanding of recovery issues across the state, to identify common issues and shared priorities for action, to help shape policy and decision-making processes. And we do this by working as both advisors and liaisons to this Governor's Salmon Recovery Office, the Salmon Recovery Funding Board, and other state and federal agencies where there's opportunity. So this will give you a brief example of what it is that these regional organizations are tasked with in the development of their plans. So here we see the seven regional organizations. In Washington State, we have 178 ESA-listed salmon and steelhead populations, 38 ESA-listed bull trout populations, and then 274 non-listed populations. So you'll see in the various regions the multitude of species, multiple recovery plans, or in certain cases, sustainable salmon plans to try to prevent additional listings of salmon and steelhead in our state. So we have quite a diversity spread across the state, and there's a lot of similarities between our regions, but there's also some unique attributes to each of the regions that the rest of us don't have to deal with. So again, number of populations, whether our primary focus is on reaching recovery of a certain population or preventing listing of a certain population. So, our approach. Washington State really chose to challenge the status quo when it came to salmon listings. Extinction of our iconic salmon and steelhead populations is not an option, and we chose to take a ground-up approach. Relying on the folks that were intimately familiar with the streams and watersheds of their local area to work with the scientists to develop a recovery plan that could be implementable by all of those involved. We developed and continue to manage our recovery plans with that locally driven recovery process that includes a diverse group of stakeholders that rely primarily on a collaborative decision-making process, using science as the guiding factor and integrating actions across all of those H's and PI. Our plans have all been adopted by Washington State and by NOAA. These plans integrate actions across programs, so we're not sometimes just dealing with our recovery plans, but for example, in certain regions, they were instrumental in development of the watershed management plans, or for the regions in the central part of the state, the primary Columbia-based system, they were participants in the development of the Northwest Power and Conservation process. They also increase public understanding and engagement, which has been a critical part in our endeavor to achieve recovery. We must mention that WDFW has been and continues to be a critical partner in the statewide recovery plan process. We want to thank all of the efforts of WDFW staff for their ongoing efforts and the commission for encouraging their participation. After all, salmon are ours to save, and recovery will not be possible without this type of dedicated collaborative effort. I don't want you to try to look at the graph. The point of the graph is that salmon management is complex, that it is challenging. Most importantly, this highlights the fact that survival of salmon rests on our ability to make good decisions together. Recovery plans are written to address the various mortality factors of our fish populations, but we need to look broader and look at salmon recovery from an ecosystem perspective, while focusing on the key bottlenecks for each of the species we're charged to recover. However, as highlighted a couple of slides ago, our biggest challenge lies in our diversity, as some of these key bottlenecks vary by species, both within and across the seven regions of the state. So in order to do this most effectively, we have to take an all H and PI approach. In some regions, WDFW has been very supportive of this type of integration. However, there are still gaps where further coordination is needed between WDFW and regional staff. Your ongoing support and partnership across all of the H's and PI is absolutely critical for us to be successful in our recovery efforts. So there are many prior examples of where WDFW and regional organizations have tremendously collaborated, and we've had great outcome as a result of that. I'll briefly touch on a few of those, and then you'll hear more from each of the directors in their regional perspective. So when we talk about harvest management, I'm sure that you guys could readily agree that incorporating recovery goals into harvest forums and those decisions on harvest is absolutely critical. So examples of such efforts of collaboration have included routine assessment of escapement goals, meeting those escapement goals for listed populations, intercepting hatchery fish before they reach the spawning grounds, the reduction of incidental mortality, and then, of course, the enforcement of protection regulations, which WDFW plays a primary role. When we look at hatchery management, hatchery reform implemented throughout the state is absolutely critical to recovery and even to the prevention of additional listings on current populations that are not ESA listed. This leverages our investments in habitat restoration and protection. We had this discussion when I had the opportunity to come before you in February, and our ability to really leverage those hatchery and harvest practices in a manner that could really put our habitat that had recently been restored to good use. So examples of hatchery management collaborative efforts have included, natural origin hatchery rootstock programs, conservation and reintroduction programs, the prevention of hatchery fish on spawning grounds, which is a challenge we continue to face in certain systems, the creation of gene banks and refuges, and infrastructure improvements. Habitat management, which has been one of our primary focuses in distributing habitat restoration, protection, and recovery efforts throughout the state, again, can be significantly leveraged through hatchery reform. For example, DFW's own AHA model shows that natural spawner abundance can more than double when hatchery reform is coupled with habitat restoration in certain systems. There are many opportunities to integrate recovery plan priorities into habitat protection and restoration efforts, such as the integration of recovery plan goals, objectives, and strategies into all aspects of the hydraulic project permit approval program. WDFW's important role in both conducting and facilitating habitat restoration work, coordination on the agency's engagement in water right decisions, and even the potential for more proactive restoration on WDFW lands. Our regional organizations, as distributors of those Salmon Recovery Funding Board funds, we're ready to help and eager to engage. A prime example is enhanced restoration efforts on the WDFW property on the lower Satsup River out in the Washington Coast region. Wonderful opportunity for habitat restoration. Hydropower management. So hydropower forums, because of how they are structured, offer a tremendous opportunity for our ability to leverage our mutual goals. We have successfully engaged as partners across the state, but additional coordination is definitely needed. The Upper Columbia and Lower Columbia, part of their recovery plans rely on successful reintroduction to meet those recovery goals. The Mid-Columbia is routinely faced with predation issues related to those impoundment facilities. And then, of course, let's talk about the estuary of the Columbia River, where all populations from that Columbia system have to travel through. Those habitat conditions in that estuary are highly dependent on spill and habitat mitigation to offset those impacts from those hydropower facilities and ultimately improve survival. The fun and ever-evolving categories of which we could enhance coordination efforts include predation and invasives. These issues span the entire state, as I'm sure you are all very familiar. Predation and invasive, both plants and animal species, affect all life cycle stages for our salmon and steelhead, as well as directly impact habitat capacity. Each of our regions has unique challenges. Some have very high rates of juvenile loss to birds, or in those reservoirs in the Mid-Columbia, loss to predatory fish species. We all significantly have to face increased adult losses as a result of marine mammals, a reduction in the overall juvenile food base, decreased fitness and survival, and then additional limitations that are pressed on our freshwater environment. So given these emerging issues, we would really like an opportunity to develop some regular communication strategies with the department so that we can both identify opportunities for support and collaboration. And one of the most important components, I would argue, is the science category, the true science workforce that DFW has working out in those fields. WDFW monitoring and modeling is foundational to both, was foundational to the development of those recovery plans, and continues to be foundational as we work to adaptively manage those plans. We cannot overstate the critical importance of ongoing monitoring support for the science division, especially looking at topics such as biological status and trends. You know, what is our abundance? What is our productivity, our diversity, our even just our spatial distribution? Helping us by looking at habitat status and trends, are our efforts in habitat restoration improving the environment or not? This knowledge is absolutely critical in knowing where we are on the ultimate path to recovery. So we share many objectives and have very common missions. Yours, of course, as you all well know, to preserve, protect, and perpetuate fish wildlife and ecosystems while providing sustainable fish and wildlife recreational and commercial opportunities aligns directly with our mission of recovering fish to healthy and harvestable levels. WDFW's role in working with recovery organizations to develop, implement, and adaptively manage plans is absolutely critical in returning ESA-listed fish to healthy and harvestable levels. We depend on each other for that success. Top-to-bottom coordination and communication is a critical part of that process. We have fantastic working relationships with WDFW regional offices and field staff, but we're looking to increase our opportunity to ensure that WDFW field staff have the policy support to coordinate with us, and then to expand our collaborative efforts with policy-level WDFW staff. Collaboration at this level is absolutely necessary to prioritize and address the current recovery gaps that we're faced with, to prioritize monitoring and modeling efforts, and to comprehensively address that all H plus pi throughout all of our processes. This collaboration is absolutely key to identifying opportunities to accelerate recovery. So we had a brief conversation before we were able to come here. It's challenging. We'd hoped that all of our directors would be able to be in attendance today, but some have been back in Washington, D.C., advocating for the PACSR Fund, which it funds a lot of the implementation work that we do. But we thought that we would provide just a couple of our conceptual ideas on how we can potentially move forward in the future. We're all going to kind of provide some highlights from our region to hopefully have some dialogue with you and to answer some questions that you might have. But our goal is to kind of put together a matrix of opportunity gaps that currently exist where we could improve our coordination, and then our goal would be to be able to meet with policy level staff to develop an action plan to see where WDFW's priorities are within that matrix of our needs and where we can kind of align our efforts and really be a united force, at which point we could come back and would be more than happy to present to the commission on a kind of a plan for action, so to speak. But in between now and then, you know, at the higher level, we recognize that the statewide salmon strategy needs updating, and that the statewide steelhead management plan has yet to be implemented universally throughout the state. The Council of Regions, as keepers of these recovery plans, can provide valuable input and participation to assist with these updates and subsequent implementation. So we urge the Commission to take a look at prioritizing the update and implementation of those plans, and to use us as a resource, help engage us in that process, and we can work together to achieve that. As we've mentioned a couple of times, we're hoping that the Commission will be interested in regular check-ins so that we can kind of provide focused messaging about our recovery process and progress, where we are making progress or lack thereof, when we aren't making progress, to identify both how WDFW and the regional organizations can better work together to achieve those recovery goals. We urge the Commission to support regional workshops with upper-level policy staff and their respective salmon recovery organizations to develop appropriate strategy and very strategic initiatives unique to our own individual recovery plans. So we greatly thank you very much for your time today, for your continued dedication to Washington's fish and wildlife resources. And maybe we'll start with Hood Canal and then work our way around the horn. So Scott Brewer with the Hood Canal Coordinating Council will...
A couple of questions before you go into the specific regions. The first is, you talked a little bit about your relationships with the Recovery Funding Board. Do you develop the projects that they fund and then distribute? And then my second question, because they're both short questions at least, and maybe Steve's going to touch on this, could you talk about any interactions you have with both Oregon on recovery and Canada on recovery?
So,
I'll tackle the okay. Oregon if you want to.
Okay, so it's a unique structure of these salmon recovery organizations throughout the state, and at their base level, they're comprised of lead entities. And so each region may have one and or multiple lead entities within it, and those are the actual committees per RCW requirement. There's a citizens committee and then a technical committee that help guide project sponsors in developing prioritized project lists that then come forward after they're ranked and scored for funding in the Salmon Recovery Funding Board. So in certain areas, those projects are forced to kind of conform to the regional recovery plans. That's the ranking and scoring process ensures that the projects being implemented are all moving towards that goal of recovery. And they're very much directly related to those plans. In certain areas, the regional organizations and the lead entities are housed together. In certain regions, they're not, and they're separate. Puget Sound and the coast, for example, are areas in which the lead entities are somewhat autonomous, but they're all trying to reach that overall, overarching regional goal, be it a recovery goal or recovery plan, or be it a, in the coast, for example, we have only one recovery plan, and then we have a broader sustainable salmon plan to maintain harvest objectives.
I'll attempt to answer the second part of the question.
Oh, no. Yeah, we're still on it. Yeah.
Yes, I'll attempt to answer the second part of your question about coordination with Oregon, Commissioner Thorburn. Yes, on the Lower Columbia, we're kind of in a unique situation in that we share populations with the state of Oregon. So in preparing the recovery plan, you have several elements of the plan down on the Lower Columbia. You have the Washington plan, you have the Oregon plan, and then you have what we call the estuary module as well. And all of those pieces of all those plans together basically comprise the broader NOAA-approved Lower Columbia Salmon Recovery Plan. So that does raise unique challenges for us in that when you look at the recovery scenario that we developed for the Lower Columbia, we had to really kind of do that in concert with the state of Oregon because we have to meet objectives at different scales. You have to meet population scale objectives, strata level objectives, and then the broader Lower Columbia ESU. So what that means is in some cases on the Washington side, we may have greater lift, for example, that we have to make for certain populations, whereas in other cases, you may have populations on the Oregon side that require greater lift to meet those objectives. So, it is a balanced plan. It's a shared strategy with Oregon that involves some very unique adaptive management as we go forward, and we're just now at the point of really trying to assess where we are in meeting recovery goals, and we met with Oregon about a week ago to talk about how they're doing on the Oregon side. So we're going to have to weave all this together as we move forward in adaptive management. So,
yeah. Just add in terms of the northern border up in Canada, so we have this very large anthropogenic barrier, Chief Joe and Grand Coulee Dam, so the Upper Columbia doesn't engage per se with Canada, but there's a lot of activity happening up there, as I'm sure you're all aware, with the Upper Columbia United Tribes trying to get reintroduction over those dams, and then of course the Columbia River Treaty, some engagement, certainly with Canada.
Pretty big dog in this fight at one point in time because I was on the initial organization and structuring of the Snake River Board, helped hire our first executive director, and who is now in the Governor's Salmon Office. But now this is very important, especially for these smaller rural areas. It's a big part of it, getting dollars on the ground, getting pointed in the right direction, being invested in it. So no, 100% support. Been in your shoes, walked a million miles. So, no, and it's surprising to me that you guys aren't here more often than what you truly are, because in these outlying areas, no, the Salmon Recovery Boards are very, very important, and bring a lot of dollars and solve a lot of problems in these smaller areas. So,
I had a question, just so I understand this slide on habitat management. I think it's slide 13. Natural spawner abundance increase from 10% habitat improvement. HR is
habitat restoration.
Habitat reform.
Reform.
Yes.
Hatchery reform.
Yes, I'm sorry. Hatchery reform is what HR is.
So again, the discussion of being able to couple hatchery reform with habitat restoration, you see a much more tremendous uplift in species response when you join those two efforts together. Okay. So, for example, when I was here in February, we were talking about the hundreds of miles of habitat that had been reopened to fish access in Willapa Bay over the course of recovery and restoration works down there. And yet there were questions about whether or not through WDFW's work with the regional fishery enhancement groups and utilization of their RI, their egg boxes, their planting of fish, are we planting them in areas of the right fish in those habitat areas that we've just opened up? There's an opportunity to coordinate there to actually put the fish genetics where we want them, when we want them there in this habitat that has been recently remodeled. And you can see, again, a much more tremendous response from the fish when you help kind of show them the new path to home that they haven't been able to access for generations.
All right. Thank you. Also, now, you said you just met with the Oregon people last week. Was Bruce Buckmaster from the Oregon Commission part of that group?
I don't recall. No, I don't think he
Okay, because I just talked to him as early as last Saturday. I think their board, they require that a commissioner from Oregon sit on their board, and he called me and wanted to know if he could contact someone at your executive level to coordinate with. He wasn't sure if a commissioner was on that board. I didn't think there was, but I'm going to give you my card so you can contact him.
Yes,
or I can give you his information so you can communicate with him, because he's very interested in the activity in the Lower River there where you share border.
Yes, so. Love to have that discussion.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I do serve on the Upper Columbia Family Recovery Board as on the Citizens Advisory Committee, so I'm very familiar with your work.
All right, thank you. And we're very grateful for that role.
Well, thanks, Melanie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question on this very slide here, and the question is, what species are you speaking about? We're going to hear a little bit later in the day under Agenda Item 15 some of the evolving science on hatchery fish spawning in the wild and some significant differences between steelhead, which kind of fit an old theoretical model, and Chinook and Coho that maybe aren't fitting that model too well anymore. So this is quite a difference here. What species is this based on?
I'm not too sure in this graph. This is somewhat conceptual, but I know on the Lower Columbia, when we were putting together the Conservation Sustainable Fisheries Plan, we were using some modeling tools. WDFW was using some modeling tools to predict the response if you couple, you know, a hatchery report with the habitat improvements to, you know, basically improve the capacity to sustain spawners. I think this is kind of an average roll up across species, but I could get that information for you. But this was the result of the AHA modeling that agency staff did when we were putting that plan together. So,
yeah. All right, thank you. So good morning. I'm Scott Brewer, the Executive Director of the Canal Coordinating Council. I'm going to give you a little flavor about what a region does and what we've been able to achieve. And as Jess mentioned a little bit earlier in her presentation, we all have different unique, you know, situations, even the critters themselves. I mean, a quick example is that hatchery reform, the for summer chum salmon, there are no hatcheries. We have done supplementation programs, though, to jumpstart, and some have been quite successful. You know, we actually put them through the cycle that they're, we shut them down, and we're seeing success that our fish are returning and that kind of positive thing. What I'd really like to do, though, selfishly tell you, we've got a real success story going on in Hood Canal. The Hood Canal and Eastern Strait of Juan de Fuca summer chum salmon, we really believe are in this home stretch of getting near delisting, and we're asking that question right now of NOAA Fisheries in particular, but also working with WDFW on that. I was one of the main authors of the recovery plan, been with the Coordinating Council since 2000. That recovery plan, though, we had a lot of help, certainly from WDFW. There was a precursor to that recovery plan called the Conservation Initiative for Summer Chum Salmon that really provided tons of the background for moving forward with where we're at now with the salmon recovery plan. And then since we've been working with DFW over the years now since that time on habitat projects, what you just talked about with the surfboard and lead entity, we are the lead entity for this area. It makes our life a little simple because there's just one there. The other thing I think that's been a real benefit for what we are is our board of directors, our county commissioners from Jefferson, Kitsap, and the Mason counties. And then we have a informal or a little less formal relationship with Clallam County because part of the area of where the summer chum are go into Clallam County there. But also on our board are the tribal council reps from the Skokomish tribe and the Port Gamble Sklallam tribe. And all of these groups are very dedicated, working together, and very committed to what we've got moving here. Like I mentioned, though, we do summer chum are unique. Hood Canal is quite a, I feel, very much special area. There's still something to work with there. There's habitat available, and we're working really hard with that. We're now, though, is the time because we do believe we're in this home stretch. And like I mentioned, I'm putting this question in front of NOAA Fisheries. You know, what do you mean by delisting? And we know what we want for recovery. We want these fish to be harvestable. And I think what's the most important part of summer chum for harvest anyways is they're caught incidentally or indirectly during the Chinook and Coho fisheries. And that summer chum has been a fish or a stock that has, what, limited those fisheries. So if we can get summer chum back to a level that allows then full, if you will, fisheries on both the Chinook and the Coho, we've made huge success. If we can get summer chum to the level of, you know, actually fishing on summer chum, as well as letting those other fisheries happen, then we've got really huge success. And I really believe we're seeing that light, if you will, at that end of the tunnel. And I really don't believe it's that train coming at us either that way. So I'm pretty happy about what's going on. We're ramping up discussions with DFW, particularly Eric Nederland and other staff there, particularly at the technical level. We're right now in about the next couple of weeks. We've got a update on for our abundance productivity. What you may have heard is viable salmonid population parameters, and also a pathway forward that we have WDFW marked down. In particular, is a co-author on that particular paper. We're hoping to have that hit the street soon, and we'll definitely be sitting down with Eric and others at DFW as well as at NOAA Fisheries and our other literally hundreds of partners in Hood Canal to forward and make this truly a success story. So yeah, I hope we can get in front of this commission more frequently and give you the progress, some good news, which it's always nice to have good news, I would hope. Thank you.
So does success mean you go away?
Pardon me?
Does success mean you go away?
No. Success, the belief is, you know, recovery is forever because once you get there, you got to keep it there. And that's just the next phase then, right? So now I hope I don't go away, but I will be a bit happier knowing in my lifetime anyways that something like this could actually happen. Yes.
So that's a really interesting statement. Recovery is forever. I'm a public health physician and work with addiction. Recovery is forever.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Where's the Puget Sound office?
The Puget Sound office in Tacoma. The Hood Canal Coordinating Office is in Poulsbo. And yeah, we're a region within a region. We're the regional recovery organization for Summer Chum, and the Puget Sound Partnership's the regional recovery organization for Puget Sound Chinook. And so we also, though, provide work on Chinook aspects as well. Yeah.
I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. Again, Steve Manlow with the Lower Columbia. Just kind of wanted to give you a little flavor for, you know, what's going on in the Lower Columbia in terms of recovery. We are one of those areas, Jess mentioned, the integration of plans. And on the Lower Columbia, much of the work early on was related to developing a recovery plan that's fully integrated with the Fish and Wildlife Subbasin plans and also the plans that came out of the Watershed Management Act back in the late 90s and early 2000s. So we have kind of a fully integrated program, which does make implementation complex, especially when you have to work across the river there. Jess also mentioned that, you know, overall we have very good working relationships with the WDFW regions, and we're one of those cases, I would say, that's truly the situation. The local staff have been absolutely instrumental in developing our plans. They help put together the technical foundation, and we work with them essentially on a daily basis on implementation. And part of that is because we have integrated plans that also address the hatchery and harvest H's. So we've had to develop some really strong partnerships as we move forward to address those H's in particular. An example of that, and I mentioned it earlier, it's the development of the conservation sustainable fisheries plan. I think this is something that the commission was briefed on back in 2016. I think Pat Frazier, who was working for the department at the time, came and presented on that. And this was a collaborative effort between the region, WDFW region, and the fish recovery region to basically come up with a plan that deals with all the hatchery and harvest impacts that we need to address to get to recovery in the plan. At the same time, the intent is to implement the hatchery reform policy that you all, I think, will be talking about as the next agenda item today. So this was a great collaborative effort to address both the commission policies and recovery needs down on the Lower Columbia. And this is something that also, when you look at how it's being implemented, it maintains tribal, commercial, recreational harvest opportunities at the same time, which is consistent with our goal as a recovery region, which is healthy and harvestable populations. And we'll be doing our annual reporting on implementation of that plan this year. So we hope to be able to come back to the department, perhaps the commission, and present on how well that is doing, what the gaps are, what the successes are, perhaps later in the year. Also, there are a couple of areas where we would like to explore opportunities for some, additional coordination with the department. One of those relates to, I think, something Jess touched on, and that's integrating recovery plan goals, priorities, strategies into WDFW's habitat management efforts. And that could be the HPA program, mitigation associated with HPAs, also looking at what are the opportunities on the wildlife areas for perhaps improving conditions for ESA-listed fish, and also into the agency's engagement in growth management and land use processes. Protecting the habitat that we have is absolutely crucial across the state. We all do a lot of restoration work out there, but if we're not doing work to proactively stem the losses of habitat, we're not going to get to recovery. And there are some fantastic opportunities to work at the regional level to kind of pull those priorities into the day-to-day work that Habitat Program is doing. And we'd like to explore those opportunities further. And lastly, habitat status and trends monitoring is crucial in knowing, are we making headway? Are habitat conditions getting worse, or are they getting better out there in the landscape? We've developed a comprehensive framework for habitat status and trends monitoring on the Lower Columbia. We're just now seeking opportunities to pull in some funding to implement that, and that's another area where we'd like to explore both with Olympia policy level staff and regional staff as well. How do we move that forward? It's just a very huge gap down on the Lower Columbia. And I guess with that, like Jess mentioned, we're hoping this is a start of some further discussions. And, yeah, we look forward to those opportunities.
Okay. She's going to let me talk a little, and then I'll try to save time. We have till noon, right? So I'll make sure to save some time. I'm Melody Krimas, the director at the Upper Columbia Salmon Recovery Board, and just really pleased and honored to be here today. And I'm glad to hear that you're surprised we're not here more often, because I am too. So I'm really glad to be here. Just a couple of things real quick. DFW staff are just such critical partners to us in the Upper Columbia, and I just want to make sure I put that out there, how grateful we are. They're actively engaged in our regional technical team, and some of the life cycle modeling that they're providing is really critical for us to be identifying survival bottlenecks for specific life stages, at least for steelhead. Would love to see that modeling available for Chinook in our sub-basins up there. And I understand that's a funding issue, and we're really interested in partnering and seeing what we can do to help bring some of that to fruition in the Upper Columbia, because it's so important for us. Our regional technical team is updating its biological strategy right now, and it's just one of the pieces of data that would be so valuable. We are also actively engaging in all H or integrated recovery discussions. In December, we compiled all of the existing data on hatcheries for the Upper Columbia. That's on our website now, and we're having discussions at our board, because there really isn't a forum for integrated recovery discussion. So our board is hosting discussions with partners to talk about how hatcheries can and do contribute to recovery, what could be done differently or better, not to change any of the existing agreements and regulations that are in place, but are there opportunities for boards such as ourselves to help? We can leverage funding or collaborate with partners to address some of the low-hanging fruit where we could better achieve recovery with actions related to hatcheries. And then we're also doing the same right now, compiling hydro data and then harvest, hopefully by the end of the year. So we're having a series of discussions, and would love to have just greater engagement from DFW in those discussions. And then the last thing I would like to say is that I'm surprised, unless I'm not understanding it correctly, that DFW is not represented on the Columbia Basin Partnership, NOAA's Columbia Basin Partnership, which is establishing qualitative and quantitative goals. And it seems like a place where DFW should certainly be represented and engaging. So that's...
Comment? Yeah, I can comment on that. Columbia Basin Partnership is this collaborative established by NOAA, and we have the governor's office representation through Guy Norman, and then we are not, as an agency, actually officially part of that partnership, but we have Dan Rodding as a staff, sits on there and participates in all the meetings representing our agency, but Guy Norman is our state representative representing the governor's office. So.
So thank you, and look forward to just ongoing dialogue and opportunities for strengthening our partnership and our value to DFW.
So you guys...
Go ahead before you're done.
Okay. So you've already heard me talk plenty today, and you heard me talk back in February, but just I'll be brief, because we would love to hear any questions or feedback that you might have. The Washington Coast truly represents a unique opportunity for the state of Washington. We're not faced with a tremendous amount of listings, but we need to take that into consideration, because we could manage two listing if we're not careful. So the challenge, while we're blessed with a lack of listings, the challenge then comes down to the department on a budget availability dilemma, in which they have to focus a lot of their monitoring and scientific efforts in other areas of the state. So while we're blessed with no listings, we're also blessed or cursed with the lack of data on what exactly is going on out there. We're also challenged with the unique number of tribes that we have the opportunity to work with. And that's one really amazing role that these regional organizations play, in which these tribal entities have seats on our board. And they sit down with your regional staff, they sit down with county and city staff, and have in-depth conversations that likely don't occur anywhere outside of those rooms. So it's a tremendous opportunity for us to try to bridge some of those divides that we are, you know, are challenged to face, that, you know, results out of those complex and very challenging harvest discussions at times. So again, the coast is a really unique opportunity, and I hope that in the future we're able to invest an increased level of science and monitoring over there. The coast is where people come to fish when they can't fish anywhere else, and that's a wonderful blessing. We love that economic support out there on the coast. Our rural communities do, without question, but we need to make sure that we're not hindering our populations when we do that. So, again, thank you very much for the wonderful opportunity to come before you today. You will get to know our faces. You'll see us more now that we've been requested. You might be careful what you ask for, but we would love to take any questions you might have.
Jay, you want to start?
I just got some comments, and you reminded me of something. I inadvertently talked my way into a chairmanship over this one. It was how, because you were talking about how your boards were structured with county commissioners. We went just the opposite, without thinking of before I was talking, because we tried to keep it away from the county commissioners. We had them sitting on our board, but we kept them out of the leadership for turnover, so it wasn't perceived as political. And that was the way we structured it. And that was one of the beauties of this Regional Recovery Board. And to address one of your concerns, because I see you get a little humped up when you're talking about hatcheries. In fact, we went to war to save. We had a really very, very successful acclimation pond on the Grand Ronde. And we were very, very concerned that we were going to lose it through the hatchery reform, and we went to war for it to save it, because there again, in our part of the world, without hatcheries, we're out of fish. Granted, we are doing everything we possibly can to keep that going, so I just wanted to alleviate some of your concerns, because there again, that is the beauty of these, is you are talking local from the bottom up. You can get the feel for what the communities want, and there again, looking at the big picture, yeah, we're all trying to achieve the same things, but what tools we use and how we go about it, that's what's the neat part of this thing. And just to reiterate what you guys said about the department staff, now, they were so great in our part of the world to work with, just was unbelievable. So, thank you.
Two questions. One, do you guys interact much with the RFEGs?
In Upper Columbia, the Cascadia Columbia Fisheries Enhancement Group is a key player. They're putting a lot of not only projects on the ground in the streams, but doing a lot of outreach to the schools and otherwise.
Like
they're a great
symbiotic relationship.
Very great partner, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And question two, this is unlike a couple of my colleagues. There's a blind spot that I have about this, I've heard about, but I would welcome the opportunity to meet with some people from the Puget Sound one to learn more and then see. So if you could have them just give me a ring, so, you know, if they're up towards or I meet them partway or something like that. Because if two of us are already linked one way or another, you know, it's...
We're going to leave you with these folders, and they have information about 5 of the 7 regional orgs, and Puget Sound Partnership is in here, so there's a contact number on there. So
is that
Snake River Bear be in there?
Is that called the Puget Sound Partnership?
Puget Sound Partnership.
So it's the same Puget Sound Partnership? Okay. Oh. All right. I thought it was a subsidiary of it.
No, it's the Puget Sound Partnership. That regional org is a state agency.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Most of us are nonprofits. So, small, much smaller.
Okay, so it's a different organizational structure there then.
Oh, certainly, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But, so that then thrusts it into a lot much larger bureaucratic cauldron.
I wouldn't.
Okay.
On behalf of the Puget Sound.
Well, cauldrons can be good. Yeah. You know, depends what you put in it.
Well, we have a cauldron in the Upper Columbia.
Yeah, I would echo that each regional organization has its unique cauldron. All of it
okay.
Itself, and then the statewide picture is a bigger bowl of soup to even.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Council of Regions, and I don't want to be the last statement here, but I think that Jess did a good job of covering this, and just think about availing yourselves of this. There's a statewide network of orgs. We all have our own cauldrons, but we're all doing the same thing, and we meet or talk monthly, not just for shared learning and information exchange, but to have a coordinated statewide approach. And I was thinking about things like the ORCA task force the governor just formed has one of my board members on it, because Chinook are one of the primary prey of ORCA in the early part of the year. And then we have the predation, you know, up to 45% of our spring Chinook are being consumed by pinnipeds at the base of Bonneville
Dam.
Right, it's all connected. So if there's a role we can play for the commission.
So in July, I'm going to be meeting with the science advisory panel for the Puget Sound Partnership. If I'm in that meeting and I'm talking about salmon recovery, I should assume that those people would know that part of the organization?
Unless there's some other Puget Sound Partnership that I don't know about.
I'm seeing their attention. Yeah. It is an omnipresent sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I'm clearer now, but I'm back in mud.
And Stacy Vinn was the executive director, but she just left to
go. She was the salmon restoration.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would. We'll take this question, and then in closing, I'll provide a quick comment.
Just real quick, I wanted to say, in full disclosure, in 2001, I came to Washington to help form the Upper Columbia Salmon Recovery Board up in Chelan under a Resource Conservation Development Council. So we initiated that, and then eventually they became their own nonprofit, so I'm glad to see you're still around and functioning well.
And we're grateful for your foundational work.
Thank you. I just wanted to disclose.
Did you go from rabbits to...
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say thanks to these four folks, and then Jeff Breckel back there and Eric Netherland for the agency for coming here. And I think there's a large need for us to, especially at the point we are in all this process, to make sure we are integrating opportunities and looking at opportunities to partner and building budgets and all that good stuff. And I know we've done some of that, and we've kind of gotten more or less, you know, at any given point in time, we're more or less connected, but I think we need to be more connected. And so the agency's looking at how to invest in those areas more and more, too. So thank you.
For bringing clarity.
Yeah. Well, so very shortly, there's a wonderful opportunity. You know, we can choose to plan and to operate with salmon in mind as a society, as citizens of Washington State, or we can start to learn how to live without them, right? That's kind of this critical crux of where we're at. And I know you all have a very challenging seat on a routine basis and numerous hours, multi-day meetings, and you only get and have usually an opportunity to talk about those tough discussions where species are very challenged. So I think all of us would extend an invitation that if you want to come see some of our habitat restoration sites when the fish are making full utilization of them, please let us know, because those are the days that fill all of our hearts with the fuel that we need to sit through these meetings that are challenging to discuss. So please contact us with the information in the packets and come check out the work in your area. Might be very welcome.
Thank you. And with that, only 1 minute late, we will break for lunch. And talk about it.